This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump's Education Secretary Betsy DeVos held hearings in recent days on the issue of campus rape, a high-profile issue that has gained traction in recent years. But DeVos's goal appeared not to be how best to support women victims of rape, but how best to address absolving men accused of rape, a favorite topic of so-called men's rights groups that are active online. Candace Jackson, the Education Department's new civil rights head, thinks that a 1972 law called Title IX has been misused. Jackson told press, quote, "The accusations, 90% of them, fall into the category of, quote, we were both drunk, we broke up, and 6 months later, I found myself under a Title IX investigation because she just decided that our last sleeping together was not quite right," end of quote. My guest is Alexandra Brodsky. She is the Skadden Fellow at the National Women's Law Center. Welcome to the program, Alexandra.
Thanks for having me.
I understand that you were among those who attended the hearings that took place on Thursday.
Yes, there were a series of three meetings, and we were at the first of them, where the secretary and the acting assistant secretary for civil rights heard from student survivors and their advocate allies.
So what prompted this whole thing? Let's actually even start earlier with what is the Title IX law that dates back to 1972 that DeVos appears to be questioning, DeVos and her department and her staff appear to be questioning in its use?
Sure. So Title IX of the 1972 Education Amendments is a law that prohibits sex discrimination in education. And courts in the agency have long understood that sexual harassment, including sexual assault, is a form of sex discrimination that schools have an obligation to address. And sometimes that's not intuitive to people. Sometimes they think, well, rape is a crime and it should just be handled by the police. But, you know, I think it's actually, if you stop to think about it, it's really hard to study when you have to share a library with someone who raped you. It's really hard to participate in a class that's taught by a professor who harassed you. And so I think, it's so important that schools have this role in addressing sex discrimination. They can do things like provide accommodations. They can provide mental health care services. They can provide extra tutoring to survivors of sexual violence. And they can also take steps to sanction students or professors who are found to have committed these acts. And again, that's not replicating the role of the police. That's part of university and other schools' long-standing role in enforcing their own community norms and in enforcing violations of the student code.
How serious an issue is campus rape? I mean, we've heard a lot about it in the last few years. It seemed like it was being taken seriously by the Obama administration. But is it would you describe it using the word epidemic, as some do?
So we know, and through repeated studies, that somewhere around 1 in 5 college women will be sexually assaulted while they're in school. We also know that 40% of rape victims are assaulted for the first time before they're 18. So this isn't just a problem on college campuses, but in middle schools, high schools, and even primary schools too. I don't love the word epidemic because sometimes I think it suggests that there aren't human actors behind this. But this isn't just a bacteria that's going on its own. This is committed by real people who too often can act knowing that they won't be held responsible for their wrongdoing.
So I understand that the DeVos team at the Education Department prompted this whole set of meetings, that they reached out to these so-called men's rights groups to address what they see as problems with how Title IX is being implemented or being used on campuses. Did this surprise you?
Oh, okay. So I guess I would say it doesn't surprise me that DeVos's department is investigating how, or that might be too strong, that might be giving him too much credit, is interested in how schools are disciplining students for sexual assault. You know, the law has been on the books for decades, but it's really only under the Obama administration that schools started living up to their responsibilities, because Obama's Department of Education was the first one to really enforce the law. And, you know, wrongdoers, most of whom are men, weren't used to there being responsibilities in schools that violated the law, weren't used to there being repercussions to their actions, and sort of have been complaining about being held to account. What I did find shocking, though, was the fact that DeVos would invite groups that have been deemed hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. She invited to one of the meetings yesterday the National Coalition for Men, which is a group that hosts a website where they post the pictures of women who they believe have falsely accused people of rape and calls for people to harass them. And their president actually told the Pacific Standard that he believed that Ray Rice's victim must have aggravated him before he hit her.
This is, I would say, a football player?
Yes. Yeah.
So these so-called men's rights groups, I mean, they have gained some traction. You know, they are very prominent on sites like Reddit. There's a lot of habitual internet trolling, if you will, of women. And they've tried to coin this term misandry, right? This counterpart to misogyny, hatred of men, and tried to come up with their analogies of feminist movements, women's rights movements, and the term misogyny, their version is men's rights movement and misandry. And you say that the Southern Poverty Law Center has depicted them as hate groups. How so? What are some of the things that they have done specifically in terms of also harassing, outing, and targeting victims of rape, women victims of rape?
Right. So these groups really know how to twist the facts. If you talk to them, you would think that men have been historically oppressed by women, that government institutions have really prefer women and give them extra rights, and that women regularly commit violence against men. And in fact, the facts tell a very different story, that men are overwhelmingly the perpetrators of gender violence, both against male and female partners. And one thing that you touch on that I think is so important to note is that these are not just groups, you know, putting out erroneous arguments, but they actually direct their followers to harass women, including women rape victims. So again, the National Coalition for Men curates a website where they post the photos and the identities of women who have reported rape. And that's just egregious. And that kind of hate has no place in a conversation with the Department of Education. I want to distinguish that it's appropriate and right for us to be thinking about how schools can investigate these reports fairly and how they can make sure that they're treating both sides well. That's good for everybody. But that's entirely different from entertaining arguments from hate groups that believe that violence against women just isn't that big of a deal.
And Alexandra, I mean, it's entirely possible that there are men on campus who might be wrongfully accused, right? That's not to say that that never happens. That may be entirely true. But are these groups that DeVos invited representing the interests of those individual men? Or do they have a larger political issue they're trying to promote, which is men are victims, which falls very nicely in line with the kind of ideologies we see pushed by a lot of male Trump supporters, Donald Trump supporters, that they are the victims and that the liberal establishment, which includes accusers of, you know, rape victims and accusers, that they are the perpetrators of violence against the oppressed men.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. You know, we know that rape is falsely reported at about the same rate as any other crime.
Okay.
And if there's any difference, it's that it's reported slightly, falsely reported slightly less often. Their best estimates are up 2 to 8% of reports are false. And that's,
I mean, it's a huge price that a woman pays to accuse somebody of rape. It's not an easy thing to do.
No, I think it's so ridiculous when I hear from trolls about how women report for money or fame, and when actually it brings, you know, such heartbreak and often shame. And, you know, that's why there's a process. You know, no school just accepts an accusation as true. They do an investigation, and that's required by Title IX. If schools are mistreating accused students, that's a serious problem, but one that Title IX actually offers protections for. And, you know, groups like these, you know, to your point, overlook that for their larger political agenda of, you know, delegitimizing rape victims and, you know, making it harder for them to come forward. And I think you're absolutely right that that lines up with this vision of Trump supporters who are, you know, many of them white men who were used to being able to depend on certain privileges and feel threatened by, you know, movements for equality that, you know, they see will undermine their status as, you know, uniquely protected and uniquely powerful.
The statement that I quoted earlier from Candace Jackson was so shocking. I would like to repeat it and have us discuss it as well. She's the woman who's, you said, the interim head of the Civil Rights Division of the Education Department. And she basically said that investigative processes have not been, quote, fairly balanced between the accusing victim and the accused students. And that many students have been branded rapists, quote, when the facts just don't back that up. She said in most investigations, there's not even an accusation that these accused students overrode the will of a young woman. And then she said, rather, the accusations, 90% of them, I don't know where she gets this number, 90% of them fall into the category of we were both drunk, we broke up, and 6 months later I found myself under a Title IX investigation because she just decided that our last sleeping together was not quite right. This is Candace Jackson, who heads up the issue of civil rights at the Department of Education. Alexandra, what do you make of this quote? Where does she get this 90% figure from?
It's awful. I mean, I don't think there's any explanation other than that she just made it up. We have no evidence that backs up this idea.
I mean, this is like Donald Trump saying there were millions of people at his inauguration or millions of people voted illegally, and that's why he didn't win the popular vote.
Right.
It's a habit, exactly, it seems, of Trump administration officials to just wholly make up numbers wherever they want to.
Right, alternative facts. And, you know, Candace Jackson has since apologized for the remark, but she hasn't taken it back. She hasn't said that's not true. She just said, no, it doesn't reflect my approach to this issue. But we really worry that, you know, however she tries to take it back, she said it. And that sends a dangerous message to all people that these kind of rape myths are okay and are true. And it also suggests that these kinds of myths are motivating her department's policies. You know, if that is ultimately her core belief, that most of these accusations concern regretted sex, not rape, that's going to motivate how she builds policies, and that's very worrisome. And that's why we're calling on DeVos and Jackson not just to hold this one 90-minute meeting with a handful of survivors, but to go to students where they are, at their schools, at their campuses, to hear about their experiences with sexual violence, to make sure that they've heard the full diversity of experiences and needs and concerns before they make these really high-stake, crucial decisions.
So, Alexandra, given the fact that within the first year, within the first 6 months, really, of this administration, this education department has taken on this issue from this perspective, how do you feel about the next 3.5 years? I mean, what are we to expect from DeVos?
You know, I think that we have many reasons to worry about this department's lack of commitment to student survivors. I'll be entirely honest with you. But here's the thing. DeVos gets to decide how she enforces the law, and that's important. But she doesn't get to decide what the law actually is. And while the Department of Education really does have a crucial role in supporting survivors, students in schools should know that groups like the National Women's Law Center are going to be using the law to support students and to hold schools to account, regardless of what the department does. So we need them to do their jobs, but whether or not they are, we will.
And so you see these men's rights groups as well, I'm sure, rejoicing that they finally have an ally in the government. How have they responded to DeVos's reaching out to them? And, you know, will this just serve to embolden them to be worse online trolls and harass rape victims even more? I mean, I can't imagine. You and I are the kind of women that these men's groups would brand and quote feminazis, right? Simply because we're outspoken women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes it feels like that all of the trolls I've blocked now run the internet and now run the government. I think it's definitely dangerous because we've done so much important cultural work over the past couple of years to get people to recognize gender-based violence and the importance of supporting survivors and providing critical services. And now, the Department of Education is, threatening to abdicate its role as a leader on this issue. And that serves as a cue to schools and to groups like these that, it's fine again not to care about rape. It's fine again to disbelieve survivors. We really stressed to DeVos yesterday that she has a role not just, in terms of law and policy, but in terms of sort of cultural leadership of, showing everyone how important it is to take sex discrimination seriously. We hope and expect that she'll do so. And if she doesn't, we'll be there ready to hold her accountable.
Hmm. And I suppose we shouldn't be surprised in the least, given that our commander-in-chief is someone who has been caught on tape talking about assaulting women, accused by his first wife of raping her, making inappropriate comments about women's bodies. Just, this past week, the French first lady, a reporter, female reporter under this new White House of women reporters who wear sleeveless clothing are not allowed to cover the press hearings. I mean, it's just amazing. It feels like the White House is becoming a place the Taliban would be comfortable in.
Yeah, I have moments when it really does feel like the early stages of The Handmaid's Tale. I think that it's really scary. And we see hostility toward women throughout the department's policymaking. Mm-hmm. The good news is that we are better organized than they are. We have more experience with civil rights law than Betsy DeVos does. And some days I feel pretty hopeless, but then I remember all the incredible advocates and movements who aren't going to let this administration get away with returning us to an earlier era of mistreatment of women.
Well, that is a great note to end on. Alexandra, give out a website for the National Women's Law Center.
Sure. So it's nwlc.org.
That's nwlc.org. That stands for the National Women's Law Center. And my guest, Alexandra Brodsky, is a Skadden Fellow there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.